If Davy Byrne starts running, lads, with the ball, there's absolutely no chance of me catching him. I don't think if I drove a Fiesta after him, I'd catch him.
The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy. Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
Now, it is 8:30. It's Friday morning. Do keep your comments coming into us. Delighted to say we're joined on the line now by the former Westmeath footballer, John Egan. Good morning to you, John.
How are you, lads?
How are you getting on?
Not too bad now, not too bad. I'm up unusually early this morning to chat to you, so cheers for the invite.
No, listen, thanks a million for taking the call. We've been meaning to talk to you for about 4 or 5 weeks. I'd seen a piece in the Westmeath Independent a little while back and I thought we must get you on for a chat. You've just had a dialysis session just now, is that right?
Yeah, I was up earlier this morning just for a dialysis session. Usually I'd have it, well, I've only started since Tuesday, but in the last week I've sort of tend to have it around 8:30 or 9, but just got up a small bit earlier. It's only a smaller session now because I'm getting used to it, but started at about 8 o'clock, so got it all done there within 20 minutes. So I'm all good for the next few hours anyway.
And you just do that yourself?
Yeah, so I've been up and down to Talla for the last 2 or 3 weeks getting training on dialysis and manually doing it. It's a type of dialysis called PD, which allows you to do it at home. So for the first 6 weeks, it's manual. So I'll put the stuff in and take stuff out myself for 6 weeks. And then I'll be hooked up to a machine after that. So that'll be done at night time, overnight, 8 hours. So just get the body used to the dialysis and the change and things like that.
Yeah. And how does it feel after something like that? Is it draining? Is it sore? How do you feel after it?
Yeah, I suppose just with the kidney disease, I've been quite drained anyway, you know. A lot of side effects like cramping and things like that. But look, I'm still sort of feeling the symptoms, you know. Nothing's changed a whole pile in the last couple of weeks. But hopefully in, I suppose, the coming months, I might see a change in sort of fatigue levels and cramping and those type of things. But look, it's going well so far. I'm just sort of glad to be nearly on it. More than anything else now at this stage. It was getting to the time where I had to go on it anyway, so it's all good.
Yeah. You mentioned kidney disease there. What is IgA nephropathy?
Yeah, so I suppose I've done a lot of learning over the last few months. I've been doing a bit with the Irish Kidney Association and interviews and this and that. It's only really then that I started properly looking into it, what it is. All like the past years, all I knew that I had kidney condition or whatever, but it's basically antibodies get stuck to the kidneys, inflame the kidneys, and then pass through all the stuff that's meant to be filtered by the kidneys, you know, which affects obviously both the filtration system and the bloodstream. So it's something that's not genetic or anything like that. They don't really know why you get it or how you stop it. Generally the end result in the disease would be dialysis and a kidney transplant.
Yeah. And how long have you known that you've had it? You've had a long career with Westmeath and with it long.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was diagnosed when I was 15. It was a bolt out of the blue, really. Just I was actually playing a game with Westmeath under 15s, I think. And that weekend I was feeling a bit sick anyway. I had a bit of a flu, but just got a bout of passing really heavily blood in the urine. And I eventually got into Murdoch then the following day, who sent me off up to Galway. And I was up there for 3.5 weeks, a month, before they could really diagnose me. So for the last 15 years, I knew I've had a kidney disease, and it was probably really only in 2018 that I sort of figured out that the end result would be sort of kidney failure, dialysis, and transplant would be needed.
So you knew you had it, but it was having no impact on you at all, almost.
Yeah, I knew I had it. Look, but I was a teenager, so the minute I got out of hospital, you nearly forget about it. Only the mother would be chasing you up, be taking your medication and things like that, you know, forcing down your throat. But look, you just get on with things, and next thing you have to leave and start, and you're off to college. Now, I did have issues for a couple of years at the start. So I was heavily medicated and on a lot of steroids that would have affected football and energy levels and things like that as well. But, you know, look, I got used to it and the body got used to it. It did have an effect on me, and only looking back on it now, you can sort of pinpoint sort of things that had been happening to me that you'd be like, yeah, that was only happening because I had kidney disease, you know. Mm.
And it, so, do you have a sense that do you know how long you would have had it then before you even were able to identify it?
Not a clue. Yeah. I remember when I was a child, I used to have reactions to different types of medications, you know, flare-ups in the skin and rashes and things like that. But we just thought it was viral sort of stuff. I'm sure if we looked a bit more deeper into it around that time, that something would have came up. But you don't really consider anything. You just think it's something small until something serious happens. And I suppose the blood in the urine, it was a blessing in disguise, really, because who knows how long it could have been until I did figure it out. It probably would have been until I was having medicals with Westmead that we tested kidney function and things like that. So it could have been another 4 or 5 years. Look at that, serious damage could have been done at that stage if it wasn't caught at 15.
Yeah.
It's remarkable, John, that after that, at the age of 15, you do go on and carve out an inter-county career. And I'm wondering, on a physical level, how much that impacted you, or how much this was in the back of your head almost when you were making these athletic achievements?
I remember my first year of minor, I was probably about 2 or 3 years on. I got through under 16s. First year of minor, I remember we were playing Wexford, I think, down at Wexford Park. And I was playing that game, and I'd been really shook that year just with medication. The legs are like jelly, you know, you have no energy to sort of go by players. And I suppose you could ask probably a lot of people, my sort of game was based around fitness and being able to get around the pitch and sort of being, you know, fitter than the band that I'm marking. But yeah, it definitely did have an impact on my career, I'd say. Got to sort of under 21, and we got to the under 21 final against Dublin that year. Was sort of picking up by then, but then by 24-ish, 25, cramping had become a major issue for me in games. You know, as I mentioned, obviously the kidneys aren't filtering the way they should be, so there's a lot of toxins still left in the body, and lactic acid builds up quite quick. So I was cramping very early, even in club games by 24, 25, and I didn't even know at that stage that it was the kidneys that was doing it to me. It was only in 2018 when I started seeing specialists and things like that in the middle of that year with Westmead that I was able to say these to the specialist, and he was able to pinpoint that, yeah, that was probably the kidney disease at you.
And did your inter-county coaches know?
The medical team knew, and I say the coaches knew to a certain point that I had, I wouldn't have been taking protein shakes before or after training. The dietitians would have known for sure. If that was passed on to the management, fair enough. All I wanted to do really was play with Westmead, so I wasn't going to put myself in any jeopardy of having a kidney disease stop that for me. By 2018, I suppose it got so serious that the manager, Colin Kelly, was obviously made aware through Jerry, because it was up and down to specialists. And actually, before we played Armagh in the league that year, on the Friday evening, I was on the way to training, and I got a call from the hospital to get into A&E quick. You know, just that I had bloods done that day, but my potassium levels were way up, that they were sort of fearful of like cardiac arrest and things like that. But sure, that's where I was at. I was getting rushed to hospital. I was on the way to training 1 minute and then rushed to hospital the next minute. You know, I had no idea. Then by Championship 2018, I knew I was back on medication. I knew I wouldn't be able to keep playing anyway. So I knew that would be the end of my Westmead career anyway.
You soldiered on for a couple of games, is that right? You thought, listen, we'll try and squeeze out as much of it as we can.
Yeah, I suppose some of the Dublin had given us a bit eight in the year before by a good
nothing
30
unique
points,
in that, John, to be fair.
I said when Colin Kelly came back, I said I'd give it a good rat, and I actually started off playing well. I was playing every game, playing in the league, and then by sort of league into championship, I'd been back on the blood pressure medication and different things like that, and it does take an effect on the body and the legs, and just the energy to play at inter-county career is gone. But I remember going into the Leash game, I was doubting myself. I was like, Colin, in fairness to me, knew at that stage but had been loyal to me. So he played me, probably should have put my hand up and said, this isn't for me, but I actually got injured in the first half, so I came off, so it was nearly a blessing in disguise. So I didn't train for 2 weeks, and then going into Armagh to play that game, you know, I had no energy. I was on, I think Aidan Faulkner was marking me or something like that, who's an animal anyway. So if you're going in doubting yourself, you may as well just forget about it. Like, if I had been fair to the team and fair to the management, I probably should have just put my hand up and said, no, this isn't for me. But, you know, I knew it was going to be my last year, and I liked playing with Westmeath, so I just wanted to play. But look, I think it was 2 or 3 minutes into the second half, I went down with this cramp in my calf that was the worst I've ever seen. And look, I just said, get me out of here. Yeah. But eventually, like, that season finished, and I was actually chatting to Colin a few weeks later, and he just said he had noticed it in me in training since I went on the medication. But he just, out of fairness for the year that had gone or the league campaign that has gone previously, he said he'd give it a chance with me. So I appreciated that too.
So the cramps could pop up anywhere?
Oh, cramps could pop up anywhere. You know, I'd be getting cramps in my back, in my stomach, in my hamstrings, calves, feet, in my hands. You know, even now it's probably that's the main symptom that I have nearly is the cramping. Like if I was to go for a walk past 3 or 4K at any sort of pace at all, that whole night would be just sitting up in bed, taking cramps out of my calves and out of my hamstrings. So it's nearly not worth doing any exercise for the minute, but hopefully that changes in the next couple of months with dialysis.
Yeah, you mentioned obviously about playing on. I mean, I think that mindset is obviously the thing that gets you to play at that elite level to begin with. So, I mean, I guess that's maybe part of the reason for that. Is it too trite to say, John, almost that like the fact that you were an athlete and you were paying that close attention to your body was flagging this stuff up maybe closer than it might have done if you were just a Joe Soap sort of tipping in and out of work and not doing a huge amount of exercise, that you mightn't have noticed the impact of it as quickly?
Yeah, for sure. Look, obviously, it's always going around that lads don't look after themselves and check themselves for whatever, testicular cancer or other diseases. I mean, I would have been no different, I'd say. You know, only that if something came up, I'd never be in the doctor. I'd say there's a lot of people out there with kidney disease that don't know it and other organ issues that don't know it. So, look, it's really only when you get nearly into an adult mind frame that you start going in for checkups and looking after the body the way it should be looked after. But it's probably worth to anyone out there just going in for a checkup, get the bloods done and see that everything's all right underneath the hood, I suppose.
You're better off knowing about it. There's absolutely no question about it. Your kidney function
no problem.
Was down, yeah. John, was it in 2018? What was it down to at that stage?
Went down to 26 or 27%. It went down to, and look, I think went down from 60% in 2017. I think it's all on the graph one day. So I think that was the major. Look, and obviously there's people that don't, not everyone has 100% kidney function and even would be down at 70, but you'd be generally healthy. But I think that gap or that drop so quickly sort of alerted Jerry in Kilbeggan and Westmead and then on to Tullamore. So it's down to, I think, 7 now, you know, 7% at the minute.
Wow.
So, and that sort of affects other things within the body with the heart and different levels, you know, obviously, because you can't filtrate toxins. Like, but, yeah, so eventually, look, at dialysis will keep you going for a while, you know, if you keep the pressure off the kidneys. But I'm assuming eventually, at some stage, if I don't get a kidney, it'll probably be what's keeping me alive, I'm assuming.
Yeah. So, yeah, what is the prognosis in that regard? It's dialysis for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, so dialysis for basically until I get a transplant, yeah. You know, unfortunately, it's a small bit of a lottery. You know, there's a high bar set to get a kidney donor, and then the transplant list, especially because of COVID now, is absolutely massive. So there's probably a few people ahead of me, all right, but you know, I'm sort of in my mind, I'm looking at 2 or 3 years. If we can get anything before that, look, I'd be delighted, you know.
Yeah. Can you stay on dialysis indefinitely? Is it?
Yeah, you can stay on dialysis indefinitely. Like, you know, it's not ideal for you really long term. But it keep me taking over, I suppose. There's a lot of people who, when they're older, if they're on dialysis, look, eventually other organs start to fail, the heart starts to fail and things like that. You know, but look, I won't be won't be looking too bleak on it.
No, you're 31.
I'll just get on with it. Yeah, look, yeah. You know, plenty of time to go and plenty of hope.
Yeah, and so you formally went on the transplant list only over the last couple of weeks, is that right?
Yeah, so two weeks ago, I was up in Tala to get the catheter, the tube. I have a tube in my stomach now that connects up to the bags, up to the machine. So just that week as well, I was officially put on the transplant list. So I've had a couple of people go forward for organ donation. Now, unfortunately, it hasn't worked out just yet, but look, it's nearly started. I'm getting used to the dialysis, and it's actually, look, if that sort of picks things up for me over the next couple of months, I'll just get on with it.
They're very hard conversations to have, I presume, with people around you in terms of the compatibility of those related close to you and a willingness to go ahead, and the impact, obviously, that it has on them from a lifestyle point of view. That must be really tough.
Yeah, look, there's been people who've even brought it up to me and mentioned it to me, and I appreciate that nearly that in that I'm in their thoughts as much as someone who's, like, let's say my dad and my sister who've gone forward to try be an organ donor. You know, anyone who's sort of mentions me that they're considering it, I appreciate that just as much. You know, it's an absolute massive thing to do for someone that's, you know, you're essentially making a healthy person not as healthy as they were 4 or 5 hours ago pre-operation, like, you know. But look, I have really good people, like I have really good family and really good friends, like my parents and my partner Tracy. They're genuinely the best in the world. So it's, if I ever need to speak to anyone or anyone ever wants to speak to me, it's an easy conversation, you know. Yeah. I'd say there's definitely tougher conversations out there.
Yeah, well, having that support structure around you is hugely important. Yeah. You say in terms of the impact on a potential donor, what is that impact? Like, what are the types of conversations they're having as they go through that and the possibility of donating?
To be honest with you, I suppose the risk is more for the donor's future. I mean, if they develop kidney disease for whatever reason, you know, it probably rules a lot of women out who haven't had their babies yet. I mean, one of my sisters is younger than me and still has to have kids if she wants. So that probably rules her out in fairness. But my other sister has had 3 kids, which she's had gestatus diabetes, I think is the name of it, during a couple of pregnancies. So that ruled her out. But I mean, the main thing is you're essentially making a healthy person taking something away from them, you know, and look at if someone in their family ever needed a kidney at some stage, or if one of the lads ever had to have a child or something like that, and they had their issues, look at, obviously other people have other priorities that they need to put ahead of giving me a kidney, which is 100% fair too, like, you know.
Yeah. The it tends to be deceased organs that are more typically transplanted.
Yeah, it tends to be deceased. Look, it's really big. If you get a live donor, you've been very lucky. You know, the deceased donor list is it's good, but probably not where it could be either. You know, because of the lack of awareness around organ donation, and then I suppose with COVID, the last year has just put pause on a lot of transplants that would have been going ahead. So that there's a huge backlog in the deceased organ donation list. I suppose that has its own, you know, situation coming with it. Unfortunately, some family has lost a loved one, you know, and someone has lost their lives, but the fact that they're able to sort of live on through somebody else, families could keep some solace from it, you know.
I guess the part of having these conversations as well, John, is to increase that awareness, because I guess there isn't a culture in this country yet of organ donation too much.
No. Yeah, and I've only sort of seen that from the sort of bit of publicity that has been going around my story in the last sort of few months. You know, there's a lot of people who, I mean, it's something everyone talks about when something hits, something's close to home, you know, but it's probably something that everybody should be doing regardless, or be involved in regardless. I know one guy who had always thought about it or been thinking about organ donation. I must do this, I must do that. Eventually when he read the story and it was a bit more close to home than him, you know, 8 people within the family had donor cards within 24 hours, you know. So that's the sort of thing we want, but we don't want it to be a closed story, need to be a closed story to become an organ donor because of how easy it is I know in other countries there's actually an opt-out system, and so everyone's born into a system where they are an organ donor. And if you have certain beliefs or whatever, you can opt out. But I think that would be a great system if we did have it in Ireland.
Yeah, well, we'll give the details in just a moment about how people can get involved. Yeah. So I do think you're 100% right. I think that everybody goes about their daily business, and there's other stuff that's important. And in the grand scheme of things, doing something like signing up for a donor card is way more important than any of that. Than a lot of the stuff that fills all our days. Let's face it.
Yeah, and it's such a simple thing to do. I suppose it takes literally 2 or 3 minutes of your day. You know, just stop for a second, think about it, and get it done. You have it done then for life, nearly now.
Well, look, it's been, as I said, we had wanted to speak with you for a few weeks. It's been a pleasure catching up with you over the last 20 minutes or so. I'll give the details now in terms of how people can get involved with organ donation. You keep up the good work. You're playing an absolute blinder there. So keep at it, keep telling your story, and keep that positive mentality that we've heard over the last 20 minutes. We'll catch up with you again down the track.
Yeah, thanks a million, lads. Thanks for having me, and appreciate the spreading the word anyway.
Not at all. Thanks a million. John Egan on the line there, former Westmeath footballer. You can free text the word donor, D-O-N-O-R, to 550, that's 50050, or you can head along to organdonation.ie. If you've been at all moved by anything you've heard over the last 20 minutes, I would recommend that you head along there and do your bit. As John said, the COVID has had a really negative impact on the amount of people that have been able to or been in a position to donate over the last 12 months particularly. So if there's anything you can do, you feel you might be able to help out, that is definitely an action to take this morning. Do it this morning.
If Davy Byrne starts running, lads, with the ball, there's absolutely no chance of me catching him. I don't think if I drove a Fiesta after him, I'd catch him.
The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy. Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.